everyone. You're listening to the Aviation Reporter, your podcast about everything related to airports, airlines, and aviation industry. In this episode, in collaboration with EMA Systems, we're going to have a great discussion with Jean-Luc Devichat. Let's give the floor to them.
Very welcome today at the next episode of the Aviation Reporter. And with us today, we have Marc Beltran, who probably will pronounce it much better than I do, who is the CEO and co-founder of EU Droneport. And of course, we have invited Marc to discuss what Droneport is. But first of all, let's start, Marc, by introducing yourself. Can you introduce yourselves to our listeners and a bit your background?
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me, Jean-Luc. My name is Marc Beltran. I am an aerospace engineer. I got interested into drones right after I finished my studies. So first I moved to Germany, then I moved to Portugal, and then to Canada, where I started already dealing with drones, which at that time, there were no more than 20 people in Europe using this. Even the word drone didn't even exist. So basically, that's my background, and that's how I started getting interested with drone technology.
Okay, cool. Very nice, interesting introduction. Can you maybe explain a bit more about Droneport and the focus of your company and how it contributes to the future of UAVs? My question is a bit longer. It's also about your offering and also about how you compare yourself to the other existing platforms.
Right. So the EU Droneport is a European drone hub that is at disposal for both operators and manufacturers. So what we saw is that there are many operators and manufacturers in Europe. Only in Spain there are about 5,000 to 6,000 operators. If we extrapolate this to Europe, we would be talking about 50, maybe to 100,000 operators. Regarding manufacturers, there are around 1,000 in the world. There are not that many. But we saw that there are no hubs or companies offering services to these two segments that I just mentioned before. So I decided to create a company offering services to all these segments to basically meet the necessary requirements of the regulation, of the European regulation. European regulation is something very long and complex, and not everybody masters, and the vast majority of companies, both on the operator or manufacturing side, need support. So we decided to create three business lines dedicated to help all these companies. The first business line is the flight permits and authorizations. We saw that all drone operators, when they have a coordinate and a date in their calendar, they need to all the flight permits. So they have to coordinate with airports, they have to coordinate with ministries, with city councils, with national parks, etc. And what I said before, the vast majority don't know all these procedures. So we created a sort of software, a platform in which we ask for the date and the coordinates of the flight, the pilot and the drone, and basically we do all the work so that they just focus on flying and that's it. We coordinate with all the necessary stakeholders. They have 100% legal flight. We also take care of really complicated flights that are outside of the regulation. Like, for example, you know, EASA has published like different scenarios like the A1, A2, A3, standard scenario 1 and 2. But there are many flights that don't fall under these requirements. Like, let's say, for example, drones, heavy lifters, drones that are above 25 kilos. Let's put another example, drone swarms, flights of 1,000 drones at the same time. These kind of operations don't fall under any of these scenarios, which means that require what is called an operational authorization. This is like making an exemption to the regulation. These are really long procedures that you have to, we start a ping pong game with the authorities, in which we explain very well like the operation manuals, the concept of operations, the emergency response plan, the maintenance plan, the training plan, everything to prove that this operation is going to be safe on that day. So that's called operational authorizations. That's one department, the flight authorizations, the flight permits department. The second department is about certification and testing oriented for the manufacturers. So back in the days, anyone you or I, in our garage, we could create a drone and we could go fly it in the middle of the big city, and there was no regulation. Nobody would check that your drone is safe from the design point of view. Now, EASA has published the 2019/945 regulation that basically, if I had to summarize this long regulation, this sets a number of classes, and these classes will be assigned to a flight scenario. And how do we make sure that a drone meets the requirements of a class? So through a third party, which is a certification company. And that's what we do. Clients, manufacturers send us drones. We do a number of tests, between 20 and 25 tests, like the maximum takeoff mass. We check the crash worthiness. What happens if we crash a drone? Is this breaking to small pieces? What is this piece? Are these pieces going away fast enough or in a sharp way to injure people around? If this drone is creating any fire after the crash, we're checking if a hacker comes and tries to jam the drone, if it's easily hackable or not. We check a number of things to prove that this drone is safe and it meets the requirements of EASA. And once a drone model has met all these requirements, we can issue a certificate, a EU type examination certificate, that proves that this drone meets this requirement, and therefore their clients, so the operators, are going to be able to use it in this assigned scenario. And finally, the third...
Can I just ask you another question? Because you talk a lot about operators. What is an operator for you?
Yeah, an operator is like, if you make an analogy to the aviation sector, a manufacturer would be Boeing, Airbus. Yeah. It's something that manufactures an aircraft in this case. And the operators in this analogy would be like British Airways.
Yeah.
It's the client of the manufacturer is who purchases the aircraft and operates
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
If we have a look, manufacturers don't operate. But Boeing and Airbus don't operate because they just focus on selling their aircraft
yeah.
to an operator. With the drones, it's the same. There are like 1,000 manufacturers that they don't manufacture and operate. Some of them might operate themselves, but the vast majority, they just work to sell their aircraft.
Yeah.
And there are, in Europe, we said more than 50,000 companies that they just buy different products. They buy like different models, like from small ones to big ones.
Yeah.
They have a fleet of pilots and they just fly all the day. The more they fly, the more money they make.
Okay.
So what they say, I mean, the drone, the more hours is in the sky,
yeah.
the more revenue you're going to get. So their focus is to fly as much as they can.
Okay. So an operator can be a hospital, it can be...
An operator could be,
or?
It's a company that buys drones
yeah.
and flies it for a third party.
For a third party.
So a hospital, imagine, says, I would like to get delivered this liver from another hospital.
Yeah.
Then the drone operator company comes in and brings this organ from one
okay.
place to the other.
Yeah. So it's a highly competitive market. If you say there are so many, that means... yeah.
Right. There are so many. And right now, before this regulation... Imagine there's a drone operator based in Belgium, and these guys had to work very hard to operate in Holland, in the country next to you, because they had different regulations.
Mm-hmm.
But now this regulation, among many other things, is harmonizing all the standards and all regulations across all European countries.
Yeah.
Which means if you're a pilot in Belgium, you're going to be able to fly in Finland, in Spain, in Italy, everywhere.
Okay.
So this opens the market. And I'm happy to say that we're in transition period. Right now coexist both national and European regulations. But at the end of this year, so in 2 months, we're going to have 100% European regulations. Which means this applies to everything. This applies that, imagine you're an operator with your manuals. Your manuals are going to be valid across all EU member states. Your training certificates are going to be valid everywhere.
Yeah.
So everything is going to...
Much simpler.
Much simpler, which will unleash the potential of the drone market.
Of course.
Because now everything was so restricted, so difficult to change from one country to the other. And now this will open up many, many doors. The third business unit of the company is training. This applies both to manufacturers and operators, more to operators, but as well to manufacturers. In order to be able to fly in European skies, you need a pilot certificate. There are different pilot certificates. The first one is the A1A3 pilot certificate. The second one is the A2. And the third one is the standard scenario pilot. But the other pilot certificates are custom made for these specific operations in outside the standard scenarios. So what me, myself, in the past, I've been personally 15 years in the drone industry, and I've trained personally 4,000 people from 90 different nationalities.
Cool.
In person. But then COVID came, and I started training online, and I saw that that was possible. I mean, with a small certificate, the initial certificate, you don't need any practical training. Everything is theoretical. And I realized that maybe it was worth less to move from all over the world, because I had people from Japan, from Australia, from all over the world coming. Of course, when you get to the highest ranks of drone pilot, you need practical certificates and stuff and practical examinations. But in the first ones, everything is theoretical.
Mm-hmm.
And then COVID came, later AI came. And I said, we could do everything remotely. We could do it through AI. So what we did is we created a syllabus of the first pilot certificates. And we have AI instructors teaching all this content. So all these years of training, all this information gathered, we've put them together. We have cut all the things that were not necessary. And all this information has been used to train AI, and then we've got some AI and real people teaching this, but in a perfect accent, in a perfect way, in a perfect manner. I'm really thankful to these technologies, and the fact that COVID made me realize that we live in a world that we no longer need all the time in-person interaction, and online interaction can be done perfectly.
Yeah. But still, the practical training still needs to happen at a location like yours or anywhere else.
Yes. Practical training, obviously, we need to be next to them. But now we're developing something that, you know, drones are, I mean, one of the trends of drones are like the VVLOS. So in all the drone history, the pilot needed to be where the drone was.
Mm-hmm.
Now we no longer need this. One of the
It's a bit like kind of the virtual. I mean, you have a lot of virtual elements at the airport as well. You can have a tower ATC in Barcelona airport, but you can have it in Madrid or whatever. You don't
exactly
need to have it physically there.
Exactly.
And the same is then happening in your line of business.
Correct. So yeah, what I was trying to explain is that the same way that I take my phone right now and I send a text to a friend of mine in Japan, and this friend is going to receive it in a matter of milliseconds, we could actually do the same with a drone. We could be sitting here in Barcelona and we have a drone ready in Tokyo,
mm-hmm,
and we could be perfectly piloting the drone in Tokyo with no issues at all.
Yeah.
There's only a regulation issue here that we have to...
Yeah, because the regulation issue still requires you to do it together with the trainer in a physical location.
Correct.
But that's a matter of time, most likely, no?
Actually, we have done this. I mean, we had some clients that wanted this,
mm-hmm,
and we, through our service of operational authorization, we have convinced the civil aviation authorities that this operation was safe. And we had some clients of ours actually flying from a remote location. The thing is that this cannot be done at a mass scale right now. So the CEAA has just approved certain operations that have been carefully prepared.
Yeah. I mean, if you say that, is it then that only the people that have the highest degrees still need to do it physical, and the ones with lower degrees can do it virtual? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, what I meant is that the first levels of training, so the A1A3 does not require any practical training. The A2 does require practical training, but you can practice yourself. You don't need a third party. You don't need a certified school. And the third one, you need like an official school that with an instructor that checks that you do the maneuvers properly, and therefore you can achieve your certificate. what I was trying to say before is that we are working on a project to be able to offer this practical training also online. Mm-hmm. Having a drone at our facilities, giving somehow the control to this drone to a person in Japan, in Australia, anywhere, be connected through the internet, through a platform that we're developing, and actually being able to instruct these people with a real drone flying. It's not that they are flying in a simulator. They are actually flying a drone, and the latency is minimal, it's neglectable. It's a matter of milliseconds. So that's perfectly doable.
Yeah. But then, of course, you still need then to discuss with the local authorities whether this leads to an official certification.
Right.
For Europe, it's quite easy because you only have one body in the near future to kind of convince.
Right.
But in Australia, you need to talk to the Australians and
yeah, but actually, the drone is flying in Europe. So
okay, so you can have the EASA certification, right, and then EASA needs to actually interconnect with the local civil aviation,
right,
to make it accepted.
Correct.
Okay, cool.
Correct.
Yeah. No, great.
So these are the three departments that we have at the company.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. Because, I mean, there's much more to it than you would imagine.
Yeah.
Cool. Now, I already kind of mentioned it. Regulation, it still plays a key role. You already hinted it into the previous question. So regulation has come a long way. It's kind of accepting more and more things. Do you see other things happening besides maybe the kind of acceptance of full virtual practical trainings and having it certified by EASA and accepted by others? Is there anything else which you think will help to make this much more simpler as a process?
For sure. I mean, I like to think about regulation, that first of all comes technology. Mm-hmm. If there's no technology, you cannot even talk about, there's no market, because if there's no technology, technology creates the market.
Yeah.
So imagine, if we don't have drones, we cannot do drone delivery. And third, if there's no market, there's no regulation, because how can you regulate something that does not exist? So obviously, everything comes in this order. First technology, then market, then regulation. Now, we've got the technology very ready, absolutely ready. Then many market verticals are appearing, but many of them cannot unleash their potential because of the lack of regulation. But EASA is creating more and more scenarios by, for example, in the specific category, we've got standard scenario 1 and 2, but we can create as many scenarios as market verticals. And then they are doing many processes shorter so that operators can benefit from that. I can see it every day. I mean, there's like a shortened version of an operational authorization called predefined risk assessment. So an operational authorization is something that takes months, in some cases even a year, to convince the authorities. And then they try to, the authorities do like a list of the most typical operational authorizations and do like a pre-cooked version of the long one. Mm-hmm. So if you're a drone swarm company, you don't have to go through the whole operational authorization all the time. Maybe with a predefined risk assessment, you can go much faster and can get approved much faster. So the predefined risk assessments are the future standard scenarios.
Okay. Yeah.
So I can see a lot of work from EASA.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure very soon we're going to be able to see more and more standard scenarios. With a standard scenario, I like to say that you need an approval. If you meet the requirements from the standard scenario, you just declare that you meet the requirements and you go out and fly. That's it.
Yeah.
You don't need to send the ball to the authorities and they need to approve you back. You don't need that.
Okay.
So it's much faster for an operator.
Yeah. It's quite remarkable that EASA has embraced the entire drone world so firmly and quite fast, no? Because we all know that the aviation world is a very slow-moving world. Any reason why the specificities around drones, just because there are so many operators that they wanted to really make sure to control this faster, is that what you think is the main reason
maybe the authorities or the European Commission has realized that drones are not toys. For many years, drones were considered toys, and people didn't have a lot of respect about the growing industry. I think this is pretty clear right now, that the drone industry is growing fast, very fast, and it's going to become a pretty big industry.
If you say thousands of operators per country, that's I didn't realize that that was the case. So,
it's crazy, and I think I read somewhere that every day in Europe there are 20 new drone operators created, every single day.
Yeah.
Obviously, many of them don't take that long, but quite a big number of them survive and grow and remain.
Okay.
So, answering to your question, I think European Commission has realized this is a growing market, and therefore they have invested in putting more efforts in creating a nice framework in which the operators and manufacturers and the stakeholders are comfortable with, and they can grow with it.
Yeah. Oh, cool. It's always pleasant to be surprised in a positive way, of course. Eh?
Yeah, it hasn't been like this all the time, I have to say. I mean, when I started, the word drone didn't even exist. Drone meant
15 years ago.
It was a drone.
Yeah.
And that's why they
toys. Was,
yeah, just toys. And what I said before, I mean, you could build your drone, fly anywhere in front of a police officer, and this police officer couldn't tell you anything, because based on what? Based on which regulation?
Mm-hmm.
Say, oh, that's weird, yeah, but there's no regulation about it, so I'm going to continue flying.
Yeah.
Then, when the states saw that this, I mean, the EASA member states saw that this was becoming a little bit overwhelming, many countries issued like a quick decree, a quick regulation saying drones are banned. And for some months in Spain, drones were completely banned. You cannot fly anywhere. Forbidden. So that this gave them time to create somehow of regulation, because this was growing exponentially. So they had to ban it for a couple, or more than a couple months.
Just to take the time to really create that regulatory framework. But my next question is all about, of course, drones were there first, and now we're going into the direction of vertiports. How do you see those both actually kind of coexist? Because that's going to the next level. Carrying people, of course, is super big drones, the FTOLs.
Right.
And how do you see the role of a company like yours into the existence of those vertiports?
Yeah, first I'd like to be clear about something that many people confuse. People confuse vertiports and drone ports or testing facilities. A drone port, it's a place that usually is located in a remote location that meets all the technical and safety conditions to test drones that are not certified yet.
Yeah.
So you want to be in a place that you are not annoying anybody, or nobody's annoying you. It's like a huge net in which you can fly freely prototypes.
Yeah.
That's a drone port. That's what we have. A vertiport, it's just a smaller station or terminal to move passengers from one place to the other for drone taxis. Vertiports, of course, they are building many of them. A vertiport could perfectly be on the top of a high skyscraper, for example, because that's not a place for testing drones. It's just a place for the drone taxi to land and take off and move to the next destination. Regarding our company, our facility has like 60 hectares of land available, so it's a very large space.
Right.
So many of these drone taxi manufacturers can go to our facility and do tests while they are not certified. However, we are not a vertiport. We don't think our place is a vertiport, because vertiports are usually located in city centers, in business districts, and etc. It's a place where there's a demand for moving to.
Yeah.
So many people confuse vertiports and drone ports usually in a remote place Yeah. So that they are not what I just said before.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, you see clear kind of, I mean, yeah, vertiports is more kind of at the, let's say, the advancement of the heliports, but then
yeah,
a bit easier.
Correct.
While drone port remains specific related to drones.
Absolutely.
And the testing and...
Absolutely.
And more kind of a, can I say more of kind of a B2B environment where the vertiports will be more B2C, carrying people, while
indeed
drones you use to carry along, like it livers or documents,
yeah,
or whatever needs
right
to be transported fast.
Absolutely, I like this definition as well. A
yeah
vertiport is a B2C platform,
yeah,
while a drone port is a B2B.
Yeah, and
absolutely,
of course the accessibility for people wanting to start an operation is
yeah
much more easier
right
with a drone
correct
solution
yes
than a vertiport, which is
yes
very costly. A very costly proposal, let's say.
Right.
If we talk about drones again, I mean, what are the trends that you will that you are seeing? What are the next big things you think will be happening, and then what's the time frame over which they might happen?
One technological trend is the so-called drone in a box, or drone with a charging station.
Okay,
that's cool. That's to define it fast in a simple way, it's like a tiny hangar that you put in the middle of nature with a solar panel, that a solar panel gets energy from the sun and charges the drone inside this tiny hangar.
Mm.
Inside this tiny hangar, there's a drone ready to be deployed, ready to fly, commanded from a remote location. So imagine, we're sitting in the city of Barcelona. We're the police of Spain, for example. Imagine in each province we have one of these tiny hangars that are like 2 meters by 2 meters, no bigger than this. And obviously in each province we have this hangar with a drone inside. With these hangars, you can be sure that your drone is always ready, fully charged. If it rains, it is covered. They are usually prepared anti-theft. It's difficult to open them. If a thief comes in, it's hard for them to steal it. And imagine we, as a police, we see a threat in one of these provinces. So from here, from our office, we open the door of this hangar, we take off the drone, and this drone goes to where this threat is. So this is a game changer, because we don't need pilots, we don't waste time with a car to move the pilot from one place to the other. We have the drone always ready and prepared for you, and that you can extend this to as many locations as you want. So one person can control a whole country almost. So it's a game changer.
Yeah.
And many big companies are rushing with this technology, because it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
We're eliminating the pilot from the equation. I mean, the pilot's going to be still, but in a remote location.
Yeah, but you can indeed, if you have them in every city and you need to have quick transport from one city to the other, you always have a charged one. Now, the battery was always kind of a weak spot for the drone.
Right.
And that's why you have the kind of solar charging. Is there still a limitation of because they always say 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I have never heard anything that goes beyond the 30 minutes. Has
yeah
that changed?
40 minutes, yeah, it's pretty similar.
Yeah.
The battery industry is a big one, because now
of course
cars came into the question as well.
Yeah.
Many electric cars coming in. Technologies have changed a bit, but the power densities are slowly increasing of the batteries. First we have nickel cadmium, then we have lithium, now lithium polymer. But the power density is what it is, and at least I'm not an expert in, I'm not a chemical expert, but what I can see is that the flight times are slowly increasing.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen 40 minutes for some years already.
Yeah, and because with 40 minutes gets you to, what's the closest city, Valencia? No, not really, because
no,
it's also
that's
far.
3 hours from a car.
It's 3 hours, so
yeah,
you need to have a drone which does 2 or 3 stops.
Correct.
Yeah. So that's commercially not really, because it means a lot of operations you need to fulfill. Huh?
Right.
It needs to stop, charge.
Yeah.
So it's like a kind of a drone hopper.
Right.
But of course, if you once you have an hour, then it becomes already more feasible for the bigger cities.
But the thing is that each hangar can contain one drone already.
Yeah.
So you just deploy the drone which is nearest to you, to your location.
Yeah.
So you don't have to send one and then make it stop and charge again.
Yeah.
But yes, obviously, batteries is one of the limitations. At the beginning, when I 15 years ago, drones could fly for 1 minute.
Wow.
1 minute, he climbed to 30 meters, took a quick picture and down. That's it.
Yeah.
They were huge batteries, really heavy, and not a lot of power in it.
Yeah, of course, with the heaviness also limits the
yeah.
scope. That's,
yeah. The power density is the milliamperes hour divided
yeah.
into kilos of the battery.
Yeah.
So obviously we want a lot of energetic capacity with a low weight of the battery. Because
yeah.
if you have a lot of capacity but the battery weighs 5 kilos, obviously it takes more energy to move these 5 kilos of a drone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's always a compromise.
Yeah. And coming back to what you see as a key trend, the drone in a box, you see this kind of spread all over a city so that you can move quickly with shipments going from one. I'm always thinking of hospital because for me this is a very obvious business case, so that you can move quite fast from one hospital to the other, or one office
this is,
to the other.
I think this is very interesting for administrations,
mm-hmm.
and I've seen, I know some of them that are already purchasing a big number of them.
Yeah.
Because imagine a small country, Luxembourg, could
yeah.
cover easily its whole country with, I don't know, the square meters, but a small number of drone-in-a-box systems.
Yeah.
And this could be both utilized for their firefighters, their police officers, their rangers, their public hospitals. So whichever, they can share the use of their drones among their whole administration departments.
Yeah. Cool. You can think of a lot of scenarios.
So many scenarios.
Yeah, yeah.
Because before, the police had its own fleet. The firefighters, their fleet. And they also need to move from one place to the other. When there's an emergency, time is critical.
Yeah.
You have to have your firefighting truck ready. It's slow. What if your hangar, your drone in a box is like 1 kilometer away from the place you want to go? It's super easy. Plus, we have to remember that when we're talking about drones, we move in straight lines.
Mm-hmm.
In the air,
there's no detours. Traffic jams.
You go from
yes.
point A to point B with no traffic jams, no geographical accidents.
Yeah.
You go fast.
Yeah.
If you are in the road, if you move in two dimensions, you've got traffic jams, you've got mountains, valleys, bridges, cities,
yeah.
demonstrations.
Yeah.
There's always occurrences.
Yeah.
While in the sky, there's nobody.
No, but of course, thinking back of the number of operators, you might have traffic jams also in the future.
Right.
But we have
yeah.
systems for that. I mean, there are a lot of traffic jams with planes, so
yeah.
That's also getting solved.
I think, I'm not sure about this, but every second, there are in the world around 60,000 planes, commercial planes
mm.
flying simultaneously.
Yeah. And it works.
And it works.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. No, I hear what you say. It should be no problem at all.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Anything else that you want to add with regards to drones? Anything you
drone
see?
Technology.
Anything you... Business models. Yeah, I like the drone in a box. I like also the fact that they're being charged using solar.
Yeah, because usually they put them in remote locations and maybe you don't have a plug there.
Yeah.
Imagine.
Off the grid. Yeah, they're off the grid.
Drone in a box for the rangers. They want to control like a whole natural park, imagine.
Yeah.
You want to put it in the top of a hill, in which is, I mean, it's the center of a natural park, for example, and that
yeah.
you don't have any plug.
Yeah, you could see in tremendous opportunities, yeah? Because if you need to check the woods to see whether there's no fire, you have kind of several drones going up, checking, going
yeah.
back, and
crap.
Yeah.
Imagine in the past you receive a call, hey, I think there's a fire here at this location. You send a firefighter in natural parks, you don't have roads.
No.
You have to send somebody walking usually,
yeah.
or maybe with a bike or a motorbike or whatever.
Yeah.
You just take off with a drone, you see it from above, you don't even have to go to the point. Maybe you just
yeah.
take off from your location and you see it.
Oh, true.
That's
yeah.
it.
But also for an inspection over the sea, inspection over the rivers, there's plenty of opportunities.
South Africa, there's a shark there.
Yeah.
How do you
yeah.
see it? You just send the drone, take it off, and the lifeguards don't have to risk their lives, go into a place and check it.
Yeah.
From above, you see so many different things.
Yeah. This is literally the sky is the limit.
And a drone actually is like putting an eye in the sky.
Yeah.
From the sky, you elevate yourself 10 meters, you can see... The range of sight is huge.
That's a big thing about drones, eh? Oh, cool.
And more market verticals that has nothing to do with a drone in a box, but I can see all the conventional firework companies slowly transition into drone shows.
Yes.
For so many reasons. One, because they're expensive. Fireworks are very expensive. Two, there's quite some people that don't like fireworks.
Animals
as well. Kids, sleeping kids at 8 p.m. The possibilities are not endless. So once you have seen the palm tree and the round thing, then there are like four or five shapes. And once you've seen this, that's it. Well, think about drone swarms. You can put as many as you want. I mean, we have clients... We're working on flight permits with clients flying 1,000 drones.
Wow.
So the grid is starting to be pretty thin. So there's a lot of resolution. It's like an LCD screen almost. Yeah, you know, you can do whatever you want.
Moving LCD screen. Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
And this is done for drones, for shows like New Year's Eve, like festivities. But also this can be used for commercials. Imagine how much can a private company pay for... putting 1,000 drones with their logo for 5 minutes in a big city. Imagine in Manhattan, you put Coca-Cola ad in the sky for 5 minutes and you make sure that 10 million people see it and remember for the rest of their lives. How much is Coca-Cola willing to pay for this?
Yeah, the opportunities are endless. Yeah.
Endless.
So many people to train still.
Correct. And to make flight permits and
flight
to test everything because
obviously
these drone show companies, it's not that easy. Having 1,000 drones flying at the same time, there's a lot of communication links. Sometimes one can annoy the other. I mean, I've been working with many of these drone companies and it doesn't always work at the first time. I can guarantee that.
Yeah.
Many drones fall at the beginning and once you have located your issues and fixed all your issues, you can say, hey, I can go public. I can go fly in front of 10,000 people.
Yeah, it's must be a very difficult way to get it all right, eh? Because, thousands is a challenge.
Quite a challenge.
Great. Well, on this kind of new solution to fireworks, I think it's a very nice end to a very interesting conversation. So thank you very much, Mark, for your time.
My pleasure.
Today.
And look...
And good luck with the drone board.
Thank you very much. And see you soon.
See you soon. And thank you very much to our listeners for yet another interesting aviation reporter. And we'll be back soon. Have a lovely afternoon, lovely day, lovely morning. And talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This podcast has been brought to you by EMA Systems. EMA helps airport to optimize their ground operations by correlating real-time data through AI, including ACDM. You can visit www.ema.euro to find out more.